Welcome to Bonus Sesh, everyone. I'm Danielle Schneider. Today, we have on a very special guest. Now, we've been trying to get this young lady on for a while, but on our regular bitch sesh, but she doesn't watch garbage television because she's a classy lady, not like us dump trucks of human beings. So, you know, we're putting her on the bonus session so we can just talk to her about more erudite, is that the word? things. Now this, this lovely woman is a very good friend of mine, but she's also someone I really look up to because she is a very talented actress, writer, producer, director. Perhaps you've seen the show that she co-created with Jessica St. Clair, another good friend of the pod. She had two of them, actually. One, her first one called Best Friends Forever, and then Playing House, which I was lucky enough to work on. And she also, you probably saw her star last year in the show, Bless This Mess on Fox, which she also directed episodes of. Hello. She's on every funny show. She's so good on the show Veep. She's also just an amazing human being and mother. So let's bring her on, Lennon Parham.
Did you write that? That was like...
No, it came off the tip of...
Just print it out and I'm going to give it to someone at my funeral and say, just read this. Just read this.
Came off the tippy top of my H.
Thank you. And you meant head, not hole, right?
No, I didn't mean my hole.
Okay, cool.
It came off the top of my hole.
Got it.
No, you got it right. Your instinct was correct.
Yeah.
Lennon, so you are, do you watch, let me ask you this though, because we are a garbage show.
Sure.
Do you watch any garbage or is it all straight Shakespeare?
I watch, you know me, I'm always like streaming Shakespeare from like various libraries. Like I
from the old globe.
Specifically like it in old English. I don't ever want, yeah, I don't want it modernized. You know, I want it down and dirty. No, I like, okay, so I watch reality TV competitions primarily, and specifically ones where there are people who are incredibly good at what they do competing. So RuPaul's Drag Race, obsessed.
Oh, you love RuPaul's Drag Race. I forgot about that. Yes. You love that.
All Stars, RuPaul, you know, All Star Drag Race, obsessed. Great British Bake Off, obsessed. That's like my comfort food right now. I was totally into Project Runway, less so the All Stars. That's whatever, we can talk about it. Yeah, and Top Chef, obsessed. All Top Chef, All Stars, all that. Yeah. So that's the kind of, that's so what I traffic in.
Yeah. You like talent before, talent is important to you, is what I'm hearing.
Yeah. You know, I have a hard time watching like garbage people, like spending my time with them, which I think could probably be alienating to most of the listeners of this podcast. But that feels like I feel like I've made it like such an important part of my own personal life to remove garbage people like that. Then to
so why would you let them
spend,
in through
like half an hour or an hour or out multiple hours,
because it is like letting vampires into your house, like once you let it in, like it comes
in.
And I will say that, yeah,
you gotta let the right one in. Yes.
Because it is funny, I almost consider people that like garbage TV, it's like cilantro. Some people can handle, like I can't do cilantro, like I just don't have it. It bothers me, where some people
like
the garbage people to them. Yeah. So the garbage thing, it's like, it's damaging to their psyches. Like they can't, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and that's, it's like cilantro, I feel like. And so it's very interesting.
I don't know if it's like an empathy thing or if it's like, maybe, I don't know. Maybe it's being on the side of like knowing how the bread gets made or something. Do you know what I mean? For being like a entertainment insider.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm trying to think, like I did, there were a couple times, like, do you remember that show Starting Over? It was like, okay, so like in the early to mid 2000s, it was an early, it was a daily show about six yes. women living in a house, starting over. And the Yonla Van Zandt and Rhonda were a part of it, and they were their counselors. And they like, it was just, it was, I mean, it wasn't, I don't know. It was like they were going to therapy. They were working stuff out. There was house drama. Like I was into that. I was really into that. Mm-hmm. But again, it did take over my life.
Yeah. Well, that I remember. Yes. In the early aughts, I feel like I was watching that when I was like living in New York, basically depressed. And like, it was nice in my small, dark apartment.
Because it like came on at noon every day.
Yes. And I was home.
Yeah. Because I was waiting tables and like teaching at UCB doing UCB shows. So it would have been like, you know, I got home at between 2 and 4 a.m. like from waiting tables, mm-hmm. and then slept until whatever, and then woke up, ate breakfast, and watched Starting Over.
That's very similar to my schedule, because I was also teaching and doing classes at UCB and also waitressing at City Crab and Seafood Company, RIP.
Was that kind of a high-end deal?
Yes, it was high-end crabs. We would serve such dignitaries as like the staff of High Times magazine.
Sure.
And Busta Rhymes came in, well, some of the cast of Survivor.
You got to have cash to get that crab. You're not going to, they don't serve crab at Burger King, you know?
No, they certainly don't. And I would upsell to the hilt. Where were you working? Where were you waitressing?
I waited on Philip Seymour Hoffman, RIP.
Wow.
I served him a blue cheeseburger. Yeah. I served 10 hot wings to Nora Jones.
Where were you working?
This was the place called the Bull Moose Saloon. It was on 44th and 9th in
Hell's
Kitchen.
I know Bull Moose. I loved the Bull Moose.
Yeah, I worked that there.
Theater district.
Yeah, I worked there for years. And then I got a job at Divine Bar, because the Bull Moose was going under. Divine Bar was a wine bar where you could get wine by the flight. Like you could be like, oh, I want to do Spanish red. And you would get 4 or 5 different Spanish reds in tiny little glasses. It was really cool. They had them on line. Like it was like on tap, basically, wine on tap. And tapas. Yeah. And they had 2 locations. I'm trying to think. I don't think I waited on anyone famous at those restaurants. But some of the people that I worked with there have become my best friends. So.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's cool. You know, I'm still friendly with people I worked with at City Crab. And some of them were like at my wedding. And, you know, like it translates. And I remember right before I was there, Amanda Peet.
Worked there.
Was there and she like kind of left there and got her big break, and everyone was like, any of us could be Amanda Peet. Like we're all just working to be Amanda Peet.
I had a t-shirt that I had bought it because I thought for myself, I was known for like my saucy t-shirts, you know? And so nobody except for me thought that. But I had found at Old Navy. Yeah, I was known for that. I had bought at Old Navy a t-shirt that said, just a waitress until I get recognized, or something like that. That's not right. I'm going to find it. I still have it. I saved it. But it was like, just a waitress until I'm discovered, or something like that.
Yeah.
And
I waitressed for, I want to say 15 years before anything happened. And then I would get like a big break, meaning like an industrial in Milwaukee. And I'd be like, I'm out of here, motherfuckers. Yeah. And then I would quit. I would come back like 2 months later begging for a job.
That's amazing.
It was tough times. I came back like 5 times to City Crab. They always let me come home. They were very kind in that way.
They, as at Divine Bar, where I was at the end when I started to like get actual jobs in the business, as long as you covered your shift, they didn't care. So I had 2 or 3 shifts a week. And as long as you got people to cover it, they were like, it wasn't skin off their back. So I think I probably worked there at least 1 or 2 nights a week, like, almost until I moved here and had a real-time job, because I didn't want to let it go, because I was sure at any minute the rug was going to get pulled out from under me.
I was constantly letting my job go. this is forever. Speaking of your career and kind of, you were talking about empathy. I do find, because you play so many different characters, but I will say because you really do have such a huge range, because you have played some really wonderful people and some pretty horrible people. Like your character on Veep is maybe horrible. The worst human being horrible. That ever is, but makes me laugh. She's so funny. Let's tell people, in case you're under a rock and you don't watch Veep, can you tell everybody about your character?
Sure. Her name is Karen Collins, and she specializes in common sense. That's what she says. And basically, she's just a yes woman for anything the president said. I think they went to law school together now. She's a lawyer. So she comes in and she just echoes. She just tells her what she wants to hear. And she never, ever will give a firm answer. So she'll literally in the same sentence be like, well, we could get a latte or we could go for tea. You know, and it's like it's never giving like a concrete answer. And in fact, there were a lot of people like gifting it or showing the clip recently because of the recount in Nevada. And in season, I think 5, my character came back to be the person who said, we've got to count all the votes. And then literally an hour later was like, why are we counting these votes? We've got to stop doing it. And it's just she's a trash person. I'm talking about garbage people.
Yeah. Well, that's what I love, because I do think it is your empathy and your humanity that even when you play garbage humans, they are, they're loaded with humanity. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you recognize them. They're not just horrible. They have a level of humanity to them and you embody them with that. And I'm curious, do that on purpose or is it just part of kind of who you are and that shows up in the characters? Like, how do you insert that?
Well, I don't know. It might be some likability thing. Like, I want everyone to like me no matter what I'm doing or whatever. I don't know. That might be like a pathological like thing I should talk about in therapy. But I think just in general, I find people so interesting. And I'm like an observer. I'm a natural observer. So like after we go to a restaurant, Jess would always freak out because I would be able to like do a direct impression of the waiter and talk about like what weird socks he had on. And she's like, I didn't even know it was a man, you know, that kind of thing. But I just love all different kinds of people. And I always want to know what makes them tick or how they got to where they are, or like, you know, even people like in the current environment where we feel so divided, you know, I mean, I grew up in Georgia, which just flipped. I mean, that's a huge difference from when I lived there. But I'm always interested in the motivations and why people do what they do. And I also feel like I've been around a lot of different types of people. So, you know, like in Bless This Mess, I felt like I was sort of, it was almost like an homage to my grandmother, who was very like down to business and no messing around but would make a joke, you know?
Speaking of Bless This Mess, I know that you started directing, even before that, you directed a few episodes of Playing House. And then you went on to direct a bunch of episodes of Bless This Mess. And I'm always so inspired by people that sort of pivot mid-career. And I don't mean a total pivot. Obviously, you're still an actress and a writer, but that's a huge deal to take on.
Yeah.
What sort of inspired you to do that? And is that something you are heading in a direction of wanting to do more of?
For sure. Yeah. I've always been directing people and bossing people around. It's just come very naturally. And I like to do it like also very kindly. So people don't always know that that's what's happening. Just like gentle encouragement, like a great mom would do. Mm-hmm. But my favorite part of Playing House was like the family element of it and sort of the tone on set, which I think Jess and I were really proud of creating, like a set, like a production environment where people felt valued and like they were allowed to bring their best selves and they didn't have to they didn't have to like figure out what we would want. They would bring their best version and then we would kind of go from there. So I think I've always felt like that big picture person, and creating that tone on set was always just so important. And when the absence of that has been, like, when we haven't had a director that did that, like, it feels so different and so bad. So I was like, mm-hmm. if we're going to be spending all day on set together, like, let's do it right. You know what I mean? This is like a huge part of our life. Like, we should be enjoying it. So yeah, I mean, I've directed, I used to teach, I've been a teacher. I taught high school French. I directed musicals in Mississippi and, at that high school where I taught. I used to teach dance. I used to teach swimming. Like, I've just kind of always been like a teacher. And then, mm-hmm. When we created our own show, the third season was coming up, and our AD was like, you guys need to direct this season, because it's really hard to get that first gig and you're already doing it basically. So why not have it be official? And so my first official, like, legit directing job was on our show. I had a 4-month-old. It was the first week of our third season. It was in Chatsworth, which is like forever away. And it was like torrential rains all week. And I was like, I don't know how I'm going to do this. Like, this is insane. But I did it, and I used support. And it was a Hoosiers inspired episode, which everyone knows is one of my top three films. So I was like in hog heaven.
I know.
I loved it from the
get-go. Everybody knows.
stop talking about Gene Hackman. And Barbara Pierce,
I am still very attracted to, even though he may have passed at this point.
He's still alive and well.
You've been keeping tabs.
Yeah, I do. I keep tabs.
Thank you.
And then I took a break because we were trying to figure out what our next, like, writing step was, but I directed a friend's, like, sizzle reel pilot. And I was like, yes, I love this. And then I decided, I was like, I'm just going to start saying it out loud, like, this is what I want to direct. I'm going to start taking all the meetings that I'm supposed to take, you know, with, like, studios or networks or on current shows that have been up and running that might hire a first-time director. And once I kind of started saying it out loud, I mean the reason that I got Blessed This Mess, I think, is because Lake and Liz are champions of women and women leading. Mm-hmm. And they trusted me, I think, by then, because we'd already had a full season together. And also Lindsay Sloan, who played Bird Bones in Playing House, knew that I wanted to direct, and she brought me up to Lake, and they, behind my back, like, figured out and offered me, because they had a director cancel, and they offered it to me. And I started screaming and freaked out. And it was like the perfect gig, because I already knew the crew. I knew the cast. The DP was phenomenal and very helpful. And the script, I mean, just like, you know what I mean? It was like the best case scenario. Mm-hmm. And I got the comedy. I was obsessed with the show, you know, even as like an outsider. So, it was great.
I love what you say. And I think it's important for people in our audience to hear, and for me to hear, is I started saying it out loud. I love, like, you know what I mean? Because I do think we as human beings, and especially as women, we have both that are listeners, all types that are listeners, but we don't like to say it out loud, because then if we say it and someone thinks badly about it, then it doesn't happen. Then all of a sudden we dreamed about something and it didn't come true. You know, it's almost like embarrassing for us, but that's not the case. I think that's in our heads. So when who did you start saying it out loud to? When we say our dreams out loud, who are we saying this
the
to?
The first people I said it to were my, like, best friends. Then I said it to, then I called, like, a director that I, like, think is one of the best directors that I've ever worked with, and like asked if I could pick his brain about it, like, what were the next steps, and like, what did I need to do to get prepared. And he was generous with his time and also said to me, yes, this is correct, and you just need to get a job and you need to stop preparing. And so I like took my notebook and put it away. And like, I mean, I was so, I was overprepared, so overprepared. Like I had done 26 episodes of television at that point, you know? So,
yeah, as a writer and a producer, yeah, and actress,
and
yeah,
basically, basically a director. So like I knew what needed to happen. And, so the skill was there and it just needed to be basically engaged, as Captain Picard would say.
You don't have to say, yeah. Make it so, right?
Yes.
But I find that so inspirational, because I do know that there is so much power in saying something out loud.
Yeah.
And having it be heard, and almost like being accountable to your dream. Of like, it, once it escapes the sort of privacy of your head and of our dear little diaries, it becomes real, and we sort of become accountable to it. Even if it doesn't happen in the way we thought it would, or whatever, you know, or the way we dreamed it, it still becomes real once you put it out sound. That's so powerful.
I think to say out loud, like, where you want to be gets you moving in a direction, and other people thinking that you're moving in that direction, and whether or not you end up going to the one place that you said you were going to go or that you wanted to be, you are in action, and like other doors open for you, and people see you as someone on the way. So they're like, oh, I want to be involved with that person who's making shit happen. Even if you're like every step of the way, like, is this right? Should I be doing this? I'm not funny. Will anybody want to see this? Does anybody think that my voice, like what I have to say, is, you know, funny? And it's like, well, just activate, you know, get on the train.
Do you think as you've gotten older, as we all are slowly getting older in our houses and in our skin, do you think that
in our squat power? I don't have a lot of strength in my squats anymore, as I discovered with my 4-year-old.
None of us do.
Getting up off the patrol floor.
But do you think that some of that, do you think you've gotten more secure in that sort of like abandonment of like, I'm just gonna, even if I have doubts, I'm just gonna throw it at the wall? Has that been easier as you've gotten older, do you think, or harder? Like, because on some level it's like, do we have more to lose now? We have families, we have bills, you know, as opposed to when we were 25.
I think I value myself more than I used to. Like, I think I have been treated well and I've been treated poorly. And now that I've been treated well, like, I probably won't go back to being treated poorly again, if that makes sense. Like,
yes, that makes all the sense. Cause you know what
yeah,
it feels like.
I mean, or what I'm capable of. Like, I don't know. I mean, there's this thing where you think, like you said, like, you book the industrial in Milwaukee and you're like, this is it, right? And I think when you're just starting out, or even, I mean, within, like, because it probably took me it took me 10 years in New York to get like a real job, or 8 or 9 years, you know? It's that's a long time to hustle without any like success or payment or any, you know what I mean? So when you're first starting out, you think like literally any open door could be the correct path, right? And if you say no to something, it's like you could be saying no to the one avenue that's going to get you where you're going, which is, I found the more I said no, the clearer I got about where I wanted to be, the quicker I got where I wanted to be. So if I'm saying no to like the music video with the dude who's like got a garage in Hell's Kitchen, like, you know, or even in some cases, like a basement production of The Tempest or whatever, like, is that going to be my path? Is that what my special skills are? No. Like, and so once I started to say like, no, that won't get me like closer to the thing that I say that I want, whether or not I even get that. Because like when I started out, I didn't want to executive produce my own television show. I didn't really even know that was possible, to be honest. The thing I saw was people on SNL, and I was like, I want to do that. I want to do sketch comedy. Like my friends are getting on it. Like that makes sense. I've been obsessed with SNL from the time. And now, and I didn't get on SNL, but I did my one woman show with SNL style characters. People were like, oh, she's funny. She should audition for this pilot, you know? And then that led me to this thing that led me to this thing. So it doesn't have to necessarily be the right decision that you're even going towards. It just has to be something. If that makes sense.
And it is so funny because when you're starting out, you think like, this is the dream. If I don't get this dream, I'm just going to die or yeah. I'm just going to, my life is going to be over. Or I'm a failure. But it's like, yeah, I think I too was like SNL. I want to be on SNL. And then as you start to get better at whatever it is your talent is or yeah. your zone is,
yeah.
then you like, I realized like, oh, I don't think I am SNL. Like, I know I'm funny, yeah. but I don't think that's the right place for me in this thing, this podcast.
Right.
is the way. Me talking about reality stars is really my zone.
Yes, or it whatever. Is. And you do it better than anybody. And obviously people are rabid for it because they feel they connect to you and they connect to that story and they connect to this connection that you have with these people mm-hmm. in Potomac. Mm-hmm. Is that how you say it?
Thank you. The fact that you know it's in Potomac tells me that your eyes and ears are listening, even though you do.
It's in the zeitgeist.
Thou doth protest too much, Lennon Marie Parham. I don't know if that's your middle name.
You know what? I remember now what I was saying. When you feel like you think that there's going to be like a peak, right? A thing that you, once you mm-hmm. reach it, you're done, right? But yes. There are so many levels of, especially even in this town, like celebrity or success or doors that will open because of who you are or whatever. And you may not ever be aware of what door you're going to be able to open, if that makes sense. Right. Mm-hmm. So like,
yes.
you think you're supposed to be, once you do this particular thing, then the rest will be easy. And that's just not. Mm-hmm. That's not how life works. So instead of like setting some insane goal for yourself that like once you get to this one place, you're going to be happy. Once you get on mm-hmm. SNL or whatever, you're going to be happy. You've got to figure out like, well, what is it that I'm doing right today? Does that make me happy? Like working on this one woman show was hard, but it did make me happy and it satisfied me in a way that like, I had not been satisfied because I was really listening to what I thought specifically was funny. And I found myself in this crazy like basement theater world, you know, in the middle of the night, like making laughing harder than I'd ever laughed before with all of these like, you know, misfit toys, you know? So.
And I saw that show and it's truly one of the funniest. I wish, do you have it on?
It's online.
Sort of DVD?
It's online. I think, it used to be on the UCB website or on YouTube or something, but I don't know. I don't know if it holds up. You know what I mean? Like, I don't remember mm-hmm. which version was taped, but it was not, I don't think it necessarily holds up.
It was so funny. I was lucky enough to see it, I think, a few times at UCB. And it was true. You played like a bananas solid gold dancer. And I think some of our audience might be younger than solid gold, but I remember it well.
She was, yeah.
I remember.
She was, her name was Sandy Michelson, and she was an understudy at Solid Gold. And right before she got her break to go on, she shattered her pelvis. And so she never actually performed on the show. But she grew up. I mean, she grew older, got like had an illegitimate child named Christian and lived in Costa Mesa and taught jazz dance to like TK through third graders, but it was incredibly sexual. And then throughout, it's like the sketch was just her pitching to the parents like why your kids should take dance with me. And throughout, she smoked a Capri cigarette and she drank like half a bottle of white Zinfandel Franzia out of a box and just disintegrated before your eyes.
Oh, it was so beautiful to behold. I mean, that I would like to see where she is today. Like, where
exactly the same place.
I know. I'm not done with her yet. I don't know if she's done with us.
Online classes or something.
Oh, yeah. How has she been holding up during the old pandemic? I think just well, right as rain, her and her cat are having a YouTube show or something.
She's going to like make it out of the Armageddon for sure.
One last thing. I just want to talk to you a little bit about Drag Race, because I know some of our listeners are huge fans of it. And I know you're a huge fan. Can you tell everybody, if they haven't watched, what's the best season? Who are the best? Like, what's the best season of Drag Race you've ever seen? What should people be watching for?
The last couple of seasons have really like taken it to the next level. Although like the season with Katya was really good. I also like all the All-Stars, but I feel like you kind of need to have watched the earlier seasons to like fully understand All-Stars. This last season of All-Stars was really epic. The part of it that really like keeps me coming back for more is when they're putting their makeup on and they're talking about how hard it has been to do this thing that they're deeply in love with. Like how they've had to push through. Some of them lost family members, you know, because they want to live this way, but they're living this way. And it's also so specific to voice. Like Crystal Method was in a recent season and she was like, I mean, it's hard to reinvent the wheel as far as drag goes. You would think it's like, there's classic drag. There's pageant queens. There's like, celebrity queens who like do impressions. There's body queens. It's crazy. But there's also, if this is something maybe you haven't seen, you might be a Drag Race fan, but you don't know about this show. It's called Legendary. So if you've seen Paris is Burning, which is
a
documentary about the ballroom scene, right? So Pose is sort of set in that world. But Legendary is a ballroom competition, not ballroom dance, ballroom, like house, like voguing, like whacking. There are multiple houses that compete. And I just like literally was obsessed with it. So the House of Lanvin, the House of Gucci.
Is the House of LaBeija still with us?
No, they were houses that were made specifically for Legendary. I'm not sure. I don't know.
Okay.
I haven't really connected the dots from Paris is Burning to Legendary, but you will recognize, I think, some of the like players, if that makes sense.
And where can we find Legendary?
It's on HBO. Right, it's on HBO Max. And every week there's like a different theme, like intergalactic or back in time, or I mean, they're so fun. And there's a guy who's freestyling. He's an actor from Pose, and he's also a house. He's also competes in ballroom. And my husband got obsessed with him. So this is like a show for the whole family. there was a competition where there were two people from each side and one had to be like soft and feminine and one had to have drama. So they come out and they're all like competing against each other. The judges are phenomenal. I mean, it's just like, it's like the best show. And the guy who is also the host is also freestyling the whole time. So he's like, first there's feminine, then there's drama. First there's feminine, then there's drama, 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 drama. And you're just like, what the? And there's big, like strong men who are trained in dance. And there's women. There's one team of all women. I don't know. It's just like.
Sounds incredible. Like I would love
it. So it's about acceptance. It's about acceptance. They don't get into like the backstory like they do on Drag Race. But it really is truly about acceptance and seeing this form that these people love, like raised into the limelight. And it's so meaningful to them. And so I was like, I'm here for this.
I love this. Lennon Parham, thank you so much for coming on Bonus Sesh. I'm, you know, a fan and a friend.
Ditto.
Where can people find you? Find you're on Insta?
Oh, yeah, baby. Yeah, it's just, it's at Lennon Parham on all
platforms. Are you TikToking?
No. That's for the younger gens.
Well, I love you. You're the best.
I love you too.
You're the funniest and the smartest. And thank you so much for coming on today. I appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. Here.